our values are all influenced by culture, by your upbringing, by your religion. And so when people all come together in a workplace, you can't simply rely on personal ethics, so the individual's ethics, to shape your business culture. You should shape your business culture. What is your mission statement? They all say integrity, but those aren't necessarily the values that's active within the organization.
You're at the right place. Eliana Power has 25 years in legal and governance, and she knows that ethics isn't just about compliance or catching people doing the wrong thing. It's about enabling leaders to do the right thing consistently, even when it's hard. She's the head of Ethics in Action, which falls under Unashamedly Ethical. And Eliana works with business leaders to align values with behavior, turning ethics into a strategic advantage that builds trust, reduces risk, and drives purpose-aligned performance. This is a conversation today about courage, accountability, and leading with integrity when it matters most. Welcome, Eliana. It's great to talk to you today.
Hi, John. Thank you so much for having me, and thank you for the good intro.
Thanks, Eliana. Eliana, let's dive right in. You told me that most leaders value ethics, but they don't know how to manage it strategically. What does strategic ethics actually look like in practice?
So, John, you know, every organization has a culture. And the question is really whether that culture reflects the values of the organization. If you don't manage ethics in an organization, you are leaving it up to chance. And a strategic management approach means that ethics needs to be up there in terms of all your other objectives and all of your other strategic objectives in an organization, to allow you to manage that and to create an ethical culture in your business.
No, excellent. I love that answer. And I think it's something that people, I think exactly like you said, they leave it to chance. They said, no, but we only appoint good people. Everyone's on the same page. But I think there's different levels of good and there's different levels of the values that you bring to the office. Some people are very religious, so those values are almost part of them. Other people are more spiritual, so the values are sometimes maybe a bit optional. How do you manage that when you're trying to convince a business leader that, look, you need to look at this seriously and you need to invest in getting people on the same page?
Yeah. You see, the thing is, our businesses are made up of people. And like you say, people have different value sets. Our values are all influenced by culture, by your upbringing, by your religion. And so when people all come together in a workplace, you can't simply rely on personal ethics, so the individual's ethics, to shape your business culture. You should shape your business culture. And that's the space that we call organizational ethics. And it is really important that, you know, we use a metaphor, and it's an apple and barrel metaphor. So you can say the people are the apples and the barrel is the organization. And when you work in an organization and people are in the organization, if you take the apple barrel metaphor, a good apple, a healthy apple, can become a rotten apple if there's other rotten apples in the barrel. And it's that process, you know, we believe that if you create an organizational culture that is built on integrity, built on your values, and so does that reflect? It shouldn't only be posters on a wall. It should really be the culture in the organization. You can keep that barrel healthy and you can keep the apples in your organization healthy.
Eliana, that's a great analogy that I think many people can understand. I think it's important also for it to be seen as not just a leadership thing, but how does this actually get down to the employee level in terms of seeing in ethics not just as trying to catch them out or compliance, but something that they need to hold near and dear to them?
Yes, that's correct. Most people think it's a compliance issue. But compliance can also be very much a tick box exercise. And this ethics is not a tick box exercise. We firstly advocate that it is a strategic leadership function. And for people to actually live out the values of the organization, they need to be aware what the values of the organization is. So this is really, it's preemptive. You know, from a compliance side, as a labor lawyer, I spent all these years, you know, being called in when there's a fire, so to speak, you know, when there's a problem. And what ethics does differently is it actually helps you fireproof the building. So it is not reactive, but it is proactive. It sets the tone. It starts with the leadership. So you're asking, how does that actually work? Leadership needs to walk the talk. They need to have an ethical mindset. We look at the organization's culture. We look at, for example, how do we institutionalize ethics? So that's a big word, but we start by actually looking at what are the risks within your organization. And like I said, you can't manage what you don't know. So we look at the ethical risks, where are the potential pitfalls within an organization, and then we support that by implementing what we call an ethics management strategy. And that looks at, you know, raising awareness of ethics, raising awareness of your standards and expected behavior. We look at establishing a code of ethics, and so that those values actually become living values. And we look at different kinds of policies as well to support the organization so that there's clarity in terms of expectation. And then the most important thing is to have regular dialogue about ethics, and specifically ethics in the workplace, so that there's an understanding from the people as to what the organization means when they say, we want to be an ethical organization, we want to have an ethical culture. So it's not just training. Some people think that, you know, you do a little seminar or a workshop on ethics. That helps. That's definitely an advantage. But it's to have a consistent dialogue on ethics and specifically also unethical behavior. I find often that people don't realize what type of behaviors are unethical. They don't know how to actually spot or see the red flags when something is, I would almost say, on the periphery. And if we create that knowledge and understanding, we help people to make better decisions.
No, that's wonderful, Ileana. And I think I like the proactive approach, because you can't wait until you're in a sticky situation and then kind of figure out, okay, what is the ethical thing to do here? If you've got those ethics instilled in you, and you've done some training, or you've done some awareness, or you've done some situational role-playing or scenario planning, then you can have the right tools to make the right decision. Because at the end of the day, the boss can't make all of the decisions. He needs to almost lead from the front, but he depends on his employees also doing the right thing. And when you're dealing with these employees or talking to the leaders, obviously, the bosses understand the incentive, because if they do things ethically, they're not going to get into trouble. They're not going to appear on carte blanche or on the front page of the Sunday Times. But how do you communicate almost the incentive to the employees to do the right thing? I mean, it can't just be a case of, okay, they're not going to get fired. But like, what other parts of that conversation can you share with us?
So, what I've seen the biggest influence is people in this day and age actually want to work for ethical companies. They want to work for organizations that where there's integrity, you know, where there's an ethical culture, where the morale is good and healthy. And there's enormous studies that actually show that boosts productivity. So if you have happy employees, you have employees that feel that they're in a healthy and in the right culture, that they're empowered, then you create a productive workforce. You create people that actually enjoy working there. and enjoy what they do. And that's actually so important. We spend so much of our time working. It should happen in places where we want to be, and where, you know, we feel that we're not only there to help make a profit, but that there's, I almost want to say, you know, and I hear the word often now, conscious capitalism, but that people are part of why we do what we do, not just to deliver a product and how we do what we do. And you need your people to be on board with that.
No, excellent, Ileana. And now, Ileana, just thinking back on my own career, when I was at Varsity about 20 years ago, we were told a little bit about ethics, but it wasn't the main thing. I didn't really study ethics. I did CA, but I mean, being ethical as a CA is one of the major like pillars of being a professional accountant. Can you tell me a little bit about how the education around ethics has changed over the years? And maybe what are the latest ways of helping instill an ethical culture at a company?
Yeah, certainly. John, I had very much the same experience. You know, I studied law. We do study ethics, but we study it from a philosophical point of view, you know, and a very academic kind of approach. And what has happened over the years is a field that we call applied ethics. And so it's not really studying the philosophy of ethics and, you know, learning about Aristotle and Socrates and those guys, but it is actually looking at how do you apply ethics in life, in business, and that organizational ethical dimension, I would say, really assists organizations to institutionalize and implement ethics. Ethics from a, I think if you Google and you do research, you'll get so many different definitions and different responses, either very philosophical, and it's not really something you can take away. But I think that the easiest explanation is ethics is what is good or right in human interaction. So it is about finding or doing good, and not just for oneself, because that's then you're self-centered or selfish, and that's not ethical. But always remember the triangle between good, yourself, and the other. And that is the most important, and I think the easiest way to remember that your behavior shouldn't only be good for yourself, because that, like I said, and you shouldn't prioritize your self-gain over the other. And so if we remember that as people, that we are constantly finding that balance between what's good for the self and good for the other, then we find ourselves in an ethical space. And that helps us then with our decision making. I also think that ethics really is more about making. It's not about the amount of decisions that you make. We make thousands of decisions a day. And it's not about the quantity of the decisions we make, but it's about the quality of the decisions we make. And if we apply ethics, we have a choice in terms of creating the world that we want to live in. We actively participate in that. So I really believe that ethics is a part of, it's not a distant, abstract concept. I think it is an everyday reality. It is something that we are confronted with, exposed to in every decision that we make daily.
Excellent, Ileana. I think that's really powerful what you said there, and that it should be part of your daily mantra, your daily affirmations, your daily routine of doing things ethically. And and unfortunately, we live in a beautiful country called South Africa, but we've had our own ups and downs in terms of ethics, especially in the public sector space. And our, unfortunately, our government leaders haven't always been the most shining examples. In terms of how to behave ethically, and there's been a lot of fraud and corruption and stuff like that. And unfortunately, I think that that's had an impact on maybe the ethical landscape and maybe the perceptions there that South Africa is corrupt from A to Z, from public sector to private sector. How do you almost overcome that narrative? And I know you come from the unashamedly ethical umbrella, which is championing this cause. But how have you almost seen the work that you do almost change this narrative to say, hey, there are good people here. They want to do good work. They want to do the right thing.
Yeah. John, I really believe that people need to realize that the problem isn't out there or just blame other people. It's almost, we've adapted this culture that we're now cynical about it. You know, it's almost, the risk is that we become sort of normalized to unethical behavior and we feel powerless. We feel like there's nothing we can do about it. But we believe at Unashamedly Ethical that real change will happen and can happen, but we need individuals to commit personally, to being ethical. So the change starts with us. Michael Jackson said, it starts with the man in the mirror, right? We can influence our behavior, if you commit personally, and that has a ripple effect. You know, that's the beauty of ethics. When ethical leaders lead with integrity, there's trust. And we believe that every person who has influence over somebody is a leader. So if you adapt that and you say, I can act ethically, I can, I will, I know who I am, I know what I stand for, and I'm not willing to act in a way that betrays my values, that personal commitment then influences others and influences out into the community. So that's what we believe. You know, we believe the change starts within. And it's also important for us at Unashamedly Ethical to grow this as a global movement, because we see value in connecting people that share these values, that want to be courageous, that are encouraging others to speak up against injustice and to reject corruption and to act with integrity. And we think there's power in that network. And that's why we are believing in, I always say, I believe that South Africa is not up for sale, but it takes individuals to stand, to take a stand, to commit to ethics and values and clean living so that we can shape the culture and that we can restore dignity and integrity. I'm very worried about this culture of cynicism around and in South Africa, and I want to encourage people to say, you can do something about it, but it starts with you. It doesn't always help to just point the finger and say, it's government, it's somebody else, the problem is out there. We can start acting with integrity by being, it's small little things, but being honest, even when it's difficult, paying fairly, I almost want to say we demand fairness, but do we extend that fairness in our daily actions? It's small little choices like that. And that's why we have a personal commitment, a document that lists 10 examples of what ethical living looks like, ethical behavior. And we believe that if you implement those in your life, that will give you the guide and the courage to become an ethical leader in your society, in your workplace, in the community at large.
No, 100%, Ileana. And I mean, it just starts with one person. I mean, you might just be the one lone star ethical person left in your company. And if you just continue to do the right thing, you can positively influence people, then you can transform your organization perhaps. And talking about transformation, you talk about creating the conditions for transformation to stick. Can you give me an example of some of these conditions that you assess when you walk into a client organization?
Okay, so from an ethical risk, It's basic risk management. So we will look at the context of the organization. Sometimes clients will say, I don't know where my ethical risk lies. Or sometimes they will say, look, I've got an issue in my procurement department, or I've got an issue with stock, or in the stores, etc. And we then do a survey and we determine the ethical culture. So we look at things such as, does leadership portray an ethical character? Do you trust leadership? You know, we look at, for example, is there a speak-up culture? Are you able to, in the organization, speak up when you witness unethical behavior? Do you know who to report it to? Is there a whistleblowing line? We look at how individuals in the workplace experience the culture by asking very specific questions that dig deep into forming that culture. And we then can actually pinpoint and say, almost like a heat map, we can show that in the organization where the problems are. So do we look at leadership? We ask, are people aware of ethics? You know, what do they understand about conflicts of interest, for example? You can really, it's tailor-made. You can go to an organization and look at unique factors. It's not a standard sort of checklist, because you really want to determine what the areas are that you can then assist the organization to implement and turn into an ethical culture.
Mm-hmm. No, I think that's amazing. And I think there's some positives there that companies can take out already and say, look, okay, we've got this stuff in place, but we can maybe just reinforce it some more, or we can mention it at our weekly or monthly meetings. Just to keep it top of mind and say, hey, guys, we take ethics seriously. We want to do the right thing. We want to be seen as doing the right thing. And if there's something wrong or you see something, then call us out on it and we want to improve. Because I think the more you talk about it, the more people get comfortable talking about it. If it only comes up once a year, I don't know how you're going to instill like culture of ethics.
You know, it's interesting because we say there's corruption, right? We know there's corruption. We know that businesses partake in it because else it wouldn't flourish as well as it is. But walk into the businesses and it will always say one of our values is integrity. Okay, but if you look at their mission and how they do what they do, there's often statements like winning at all cost. Now, if you've got a culture in your organization that says winning at all cost, when your employees have to make decisions, they're not necessarily going to make values-based decisions. They're going to make decisions that will help them cut corners. It's what is prioritized in order to achieve the outcome. And if you say it's integrity, then, you know, we look at things like, what is your mission statement? Different organizations have different mission statements. They all say integrity, but those aren't necessarily the values that's active within the organization. So it's about embedding those values, communicating that clearly, making sure the employees understand what those values are, how you feel about doing business ethically. And then, like you said, keeping that dialogue going, consistently talking about it, and helping people to speak up. So there shouldn't be a culture of fear. There should be a culture of, you know, when I witness unethical behavior, I don't worry what's going to happen to me. I'm able to speak up. And not necessarily, it's not always possible for people to directly report it. There's a lot of actions you can take as an individual that doesn't necessarily require you to go and report it to your manager. And we really encourage organizations to have whistleblowing opportunities so that it's anonymous, so that there's confidentiality in that. We see that organizations that have whistleblowing hotlines have far higher reporting incidents. And, you know, if you're then aware of those incidents, you can manage that. You can look at how to deal with that. Another thing, for example, when it comes to that the ethical culture, is how do employees respond? Do they respond ethically or do they respond unethically? And it ties into our earlier conversation about compliance. Do we reward ethical behavior? Not let alone speak up, but do we actually reward ethical behavior? So one of the things at Ethics in Action that we look at is in your key performance indicators, when your performance analysis is done, is there any benefit for you in terms of being ethical? If it's a value driver for the organization, then, you know, we should start talking about rewarding ethical behavior, but not only punishing unethical behavior. So it's about bringing that out into the open and rewarding people for being ethical.
Mm. No, 100%, Helena. I agree 100% with you. And Helena, the other thing that you told me is that you're busy scaling your ethics health check, which sounds really, really useful. What kinds of risks and opportunities has it revealed at some of your clients? I mean, I think some of these things probably they don't even know existed.
Yes. So it's very interesting. I think the key thing that I see over and over again with this health check is management's not aware of the culture. You find many different responses. And so if people are all working in the same place, but they don't agree on what the culture is, for example, then it's up for grabs. You know, people will determine or interpret that in any way that they see fit. So, and whether or not the leaders display ethical behavior. So it's it really digs deep into leadership accountability. And often leaders don't, they think they act ethically. They'll say, oh, no, I'm an ethical leader. But when we ask the questions from the staff, I often find that that's not the experience of the employees. And so then we really help with that to say, okay, so how do we walk the talk? And it starts at the top. It starts in the boardroom. It starts with your board of directors that's responsible for creating an ethical culture. And how does that influence your decision-making as a leader and your... We have a coach, but it's more like a mentorship program where we also help CEOs and help leaders to make choices in a difficult world. It's not that easy. It can sound very straightforward as to what is right and what is wrong, but you and I know we often find ourselves in situations where you almost have to choose the best of the wrong, you know, or there's ethical dilemmas, there's gray areas. It's not always black or white. And so a lot of the, almost want to say, development that takes place in institutionalizing ethics is helping people to make ethical decisions and sort of training them to say, you know, if you have an ethical framework or an ethical mindset, if it's front and center, then there's a certain way that you make decisions, and that helps the organization and it helps the leaders in their decision-making.
Mm. No, 100%, Helena. And talking about the boardrooms, if I sat in with you in one of like your first client engagements, you're talking to the leadership team and you're starting the ethical conversation, tell me about how that conversation actually goes and maybe some of the surprising things that you start talking to them about.
it differs. Unfortunately, to be honest, what I see more often now or mostly is that there's a trigger event. So unfortunately, you know, people will still come only once there's been some reputational damage or they're in the newspaper for the wrong reason, or, you know, there's negative publicity about something. And so the motivation, unfortunately, still often is we'll invest in it because we've experienced the damage. I would really have, in the ideal world, that people understand that, you know, that we shouldn't only respond to this when there's a problem, or when the problem has become so big that we realize we need to manage it. I would appreciate it if boards and leaders say, I need to manage the ethics in my organization because I understand that there's a return on investment if I do that. And so, you know, it's really about making the business case for ethics. Once organizations understand that there is this return on investment, there is this benefit, then that conversation, you know, flows a lot easier. So I do try and pitch it on explaining to businesses that there's value in doing this. There's a return on your investment here.
Okay, excellent, Ileana. And I have to ask you an AI question because, I mean, AI is all the rage and people are losing their minds about it currently. So where does AI fit into business ethics? I mean, I can ask ChatGPT to do my work for me and hopefully my boss doesn't catch me. But I think it's a lot more than that. Where do you see AI playing a role in ethics in a good way and even sometimes in a bad way?
Yeah. So again, you know, it is something that you need to manage because all employees are using AI. And the big risk there is the information. You know, people don't realize that what they put into ChatGPT or whatever they use, that actually then becomes public knowledge. So we find that people share financial data, they share confidential information, and that is then all, you know, it's meant to stay within the organization and then that's out there. And also the responses, you know, people tend to 100% just accept the response. And so the input, I want to say, you know, is if I always say, if you corrupt the input, you corrupt the output. And so now suddenly it's not an employee with the correct context formulating a response or a decision or a policy or whatever they do. It's a bot. You know, and so that corrupts actually the organization's output. There's a very real risk of that happening. So our position on that is ethics is very relevant when it comes to AI because it's another area of risk, and it's an area of risk that we need to manage. The law always catches up afterwards. This is where you need ethics because this is before the law is actually or has caught up. The best way to do that is to actually have a policy on the use of AI. So again, so that employees understand what the risks are, what the expected behavior is, and how they can function and behave ethically within that environment.
100%, Ileana. I think that's the basics that you should at least start with. At least have some sort of policy, some sort of agreement on how to use it and what is allowed and what is not allowed. And if you're unsure, then ask an expert. Ask an expert like yourself or get in someone to advise you because things can go horribly wrong and it's not going to be the employee going to jail. It's probably going to be one of the bosses because they should have known better or they should have had a process in place. Ileana, if a business owner's been listening to this and they agree with everything that we've said so far, they want to do business in an ethical way, but they've got no documents, they've got no policies, they've got no procedures, they don't have a value statement against their wall. How can they start implementing some of these concepts and principles to kind of instill this culture of ethics? Like, where's a good place to start for them?
I would always start with crafting a almost bespoke code of ethics. People are very quick to draft disciplinary policies and, you know, or say, okay, well, when this happens, then this is what we do. I would always advise to draft a code of ethics that speaks to your business specifically, your context, and how you want to operate ethically. Set the tone in that kind of way. I include it in, and I'll always recommend that you include it in even your employment contracts. Set the tone from the start when you employ people. Make sure that there is a contractual agreement that the employee understands that this is the business goal is to operate ethically, and that you are required to make decisions not only in the best interest of the business, but to do it in an integrous manner, and behave ethically responsibly. And that is then supported with a code of ethics. That goes a long way. That is a very, very good start.
Excellent. I couldn't agree with you more. I think that's the basics. And then to just to reflect on that on a regular basis, do it as part of your Manco meetings, your Exco meetings, ask people if they've seen any warning signs, stuff like that, because that's how you pick up on these red lights or these things that are happening in the shadows, and you don't want to be caught out by that type of stuff.
I was actually also the other day, I reviewed an organization, and they have these values, but they never speak about ethics. And one of the recommendations that I made to them was, because they said, where do we start now? And I said, okay, so when you onboard somebody, do they, when you onboard them and they're a new employee, show them what you want in terms of ethical behavior. Talk about ethics. Talk about it in your interview. Test it. You know, you can test it. But make sure that you, when you onboard people, that you actually onboard them to understand what your ethical business goal is, how you do things, how you make decisions. It just empowers them from the start to know what the standard is and then to act in that way. So, you know, if you've got a big organization, you think, sure, I don't know, where do I start? Start with the code, start with interviewing correctly and putting it in the contract, and then make sure that in your onboarding sessions that you talk about ethics and that you explain what your ethical objectives are as a business.
Yes, 100%. That's really, really important just to make a start with that. And now, Ileana, at The Right Place Podcast, we believe your right place is at the intersection of your roles, relationships, and environments. And I just want to reflect on that a little bit. You've merged 25 years of legal and governance work with your passion for ethics. Was there a specific turning point where you knew you had to go all in on this role that you have?
I do feel that it's come over many years, actually. In practicing, I always felt that it was reactive, and I wanted to have an opportunity to be a bit more proactive. You know, hindsight is 20/20 vision, and as a lawyer, you know, representing organizations across all the industries and sectors in South Africa, you get insight into what goes wrong. And I can tell you, all of the cases, all of the fraud, the dishonesty, theft, even down to smaller things like persistent late coming or poor performance, you know, those things are happening to businesses. It's costing them a lot of money, not only lost revenue, but then the cost of getting a lawyer in, it's a difficult and a long process to dismiss. And then to go through the whole legal process, there's a huge emotional cost to that as well. And so it's not only the financial cost, but there's the time, the resources, the emotional cost involved in that. And I got to a place where I was feeling I wasn't making a difference. You know, it just keeps happening, and it's different cases, but it's the same sort of pattern. And over time, that pattern becomes very clear that there's a lack of ethics, there's a lack of ethical culture, or there's a lack of understanding and buy-in from the employees. And that was really for me the driver to say, what can I do that's not reactive, but that is proactive, that can actually help organizations to manage this better so that long-term there's value, they don't sit with these reactive challenges and costs, and build a business that they're proud of and that they know that the employees buy into this vision, and a business that's responsible. So that was kind of the driving force behind that. And then our family is, you know, my late father-in-law started Unashamedly Ethical. And that was really also from a personal conviction. He was in the construction industry, and there was a lot of collusion in the construction industry. But it was, you know, the way that he put it at that stage, it was almost the norm. You know, I think about, for example, I remember when I had to move and I had to get a quote for my move. And then you get three quotes, but all three moving companies talk to each other and make sure that they quote so that somebody gets the job. You know, so that's the kind of collusion. And that was also in place in the construction industry. And Graham felt that he wanted that to change. He didn't want to be a part of it. He didn't want that to be the norm anymore. And he started with his personal commitment, but then also taking his business through changing and becoming an ethical business. And so I really believed in that message. I really felt that that is a place where I can have an opportunity to work with purpose, you know, and to bring positive change. And that led me to then studying to becoming a certified ethics officer, giving life to this consultancy, and hoping that I can help businesses so that they don't have to always deal or spend effort or time and energy on the negative, but that we rather focus our energy on the positive and creating that value and that ethical culture.
Mm-hmm. No, 100%, Ileana. I think you've gone down definitely the right path. I think especially in a country like South Africa, we need more of this. We need more advocacy. We need more education. We need more toll-free hotlines for people to report this so that we can say, hey, look, enough is enough. We don't need this. This isn't what South Africa is about. And talking about that and being more accountable, your word for 2025 is accountability, which I don't think is ironic at all. I think it's a fantastic word to have. How has that served you so far this year, and where do you think you can even improve on it?
My word is accountability because I have to hold myself accountable first before I want to hold everybody else accountable. And so ethical leadership really means going first. I have to go first. So I have to have the courage to model the values that I speak about. And I have to, in my workplace, influence others so that I know that they are comfortable knowing that, you know, I'm an ethical person, I make ethical decisions, and I hold myself accountable. So I don't do things that I expect others not to do, you know. It starts with me. And that means showing up on time, that means putting in the effort, that means not cutting corners, not using AI to generate a report and pass it off as my own. You know, it really is in the small daily actions, but it's about that being a visible part of my life. And it's not only in the workplace, it's for my children as well at home. You know, I need to be accountable, and my kids need to see that. So that means if I make a mistake, I own up to it. That means that when I speak honestly. That means how I treat my domestic workers. My children see that there's fairness, there's integrity, there's dignity in that relationship. And so those are the things, you know, my relationships with other people as well. Those are the values that I hold dear, and therefore I need to act on it, and it needs to be visible. I don't need to tell people I'm ethical. They need to be able to see it.
100%. I mean, that's definitely the best way to live. And now, Elena, we're coming to the end of our podcast recording today, and we always ask our guests the same question. Elena, where is your right place in 2025?
Right here. I have this gift that I'm busy developing something that really is purpose-driven. And I believe in living a purpose-driven life. And so the gift of being involved in this organization, being a change maker, I almost want to say disrupting the status quo, those are the areas that I enjoy being in. So definitely being where I am right now, doing what I'm doing right now, trusting for positive change in South Africa. I, like I said to you, I believe that South Africa is not up for sale. I would love to have a country where the culture is an ethical culture, and where I am right now, I can do something about it. So that makes me very happy.
No, excellent. I love that answer. I think you nailed it there, and I think that's the perfect way to almost like see your role in society, but also see that, look, I'm here for a bigger purpose. This is my hand that I've been dealt, and I'm going to make the most of it, and I'm going to be useful and help other people at the same time. Elena, it's been great to talk to you today. Thank you so much for your time. If people want to connect with you and learn more about Ethics in Action, where's the best place to do that?
So I have a website. It's Ethics in Action, www.ethicsinaction.co.za. My details are all on there. They can also reach me at Unashamedly Ethical's offices. We are based in Somerset West, on the beautiful Lawrenceford Farm Estate. But our contact number is also on the website, my cell phone number. So please do reach out to me, even if it's just to have a conversation.
Excellent, Elena. Thank you so much. Elena, it's been a wonderful chat. I appreciate your time and everything that you're doing in the space. I think it's really important. Ladies and gentlemen, please connect with Elena. Remember to follow and subscribe to The Right Place podcast. And we will see you next time at The Right Place. Cheers.